Hello and welcome to another episode of the Charity Digital podcast. My name is Laura, I'm a content writer at Charity Digital, and today we're here to talk to you about the topic on everybody's minds at the moment, artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence has already long impacted our lives, not least if you're a content writer. But recent developments in the technology have created a frenzy around its possibilities and risks. While some are excited about saving time and money with new AI technologies, others are sceptical and would much rather proceed with caution. In 2023, we've seen AI applied in wild, futuristic ways, putting the Pope in a very stylish puffer jacket, to name but one. But significantly, we've also seen it used in much more mundane settings, for extracting website data, detecting plagiarism, or generating email subject lines. With AI now at all of our fingertips, we want to know how charity professionals think this rapidly emerging technology will impact on the crucial work of charities. In this episode, I'm joined by three of Charity Digital's finest, very non-artificial minds, our CEO, Jonathan Chevalier, Transformation Manager, Kiki Tetley, and Content Editor, Johan Mark Jones, as we learn more about the different perspectives of AI in the charity sector, how it's already impacting the ways we are working, and how it could impact charity work in the future. So, I guess my first question starts with the here and now. Have AI technologies already impacted the way we work? Johan, let's start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think AI is everywhere. Even when we don't know we're using it, we're using it. So like you can go through a day in the life of AI almost. You know, like looking at today, I stayed at my mum's yesterday, so I had a different route to work. And so I took Google Maps, which is dependent on AI. AI dictates the music choice when I was on the train because I used them to an algorithm. You know, when you go past a certain amount of Spotify songs and it just gives you the next one, that's AI. It dictated the book I read on the train as well because Amazon gives you suggestions on AI. I open my phone with AI on Face ID, personalized feeds on my social media AI. And then when I get to work, so much is already dictated by AI. Before we, as a content writer, obviously the talk is going to be a lot on ChatGPT and so on and so forth. But we already used content AI, Microsoft Word, spell check, that's AI. Predictive text, when you text your friends, that's AI. So much of it is just basically taking loads of data and using it in an artificial and intelligent way. Google Ads are AI. Your spell check on your email, spam filters are AI, as is antivirus, is largely dictated by AI. So without you knowing, there's all these little ways that AI is impacting your day and you're using it without knowing. Increasingly, there's more purposeful uses of AI, particularly in content, and we'll probably get onto that a little bit later. But the purposeful uses of AI are also everywhere. Laura mentioned to me yesterday that there's an AI bot that tells you AI things that AI does. So for example, you can get Smalltalk AI, which helps you, and I actually probably need to use this, helps you learn how to small talk. So yesterday, an estate agent came around my house and said, it's really hot out there, and I panicked. So that AI would help me be more socially
good. So you panicked and had time to get your phone.
I got my phone out, I learned how to small talk, and then I basically proceeded to nail it. And then there's these purposeful things, like, so if you go on this, it's called the small, what's it called? It's AI, there's an AI for that.
Yeah.
If you go on that, you search using an AI generated platform, you search for all the different AIs you can get. So literally anything. Type in small talk, there's 16 different AIs. So 16 AIs for small talk. I mean, this is revolutionary, of course. It is also very tedious. I think that's worth mentioning. And just to pinpoint a little bit on the content thing. So we are using it a lot more in the way we work. ChatGPT is the obvious one. We are going to talk about that. Jasper Bard as well, which is a name that I don't particularly like. But again, we are using Grammarly. That was AI. Hemingway was AI. So these things aren't new. They're just more advanced. But the thing is, they also have huge drawbacks and just are not as far advanced as they seem. So, you know, ChatGPT is probably the best option to mention, but it's being used in a way that in some ways is inappropriate, with people publishing stuff almost directly from ChatGPT. We'll get onto how that causes risks and there's basically a moral hazard in doing that. But for now, I would say we are basically using AI across the board and we don't know it, and it's going to continue.
Yeah, I think that's true. What about you, Kiki? What do you think?
I think you just talked in 100 different ways about applications of AI that I hadn't thought of in preparation of today's podcast. I mean, the way it's impacted me, I mean, from a work perspective, it's this odd feeling of seeing something in the news and having it very quickly become applicable to your life. It's not something that I've experienced before in my career so far. I think that, you know, been thinking about AI for some time, there's been amazing breakthroughs over the last few years. I mean, we think of sort of similar technologies and the way that they're going to, we're in this nascent weird stage where we have a lack of regulation, where we have this incredibly new technology and we're not quite sure how we're going to use it. Thinking of examples like the CRISPR technology, the way that we can now selectively edit genes and how some scientists have already gone ahead and edited the genes in children. That happened in China, and then the scientist was disappeared. So, you know, it's all to say, sorry, that was a bit scary, wasn't it? No, that's all to say that, you know, it's something that's lingering on the mind with me right now. As far as it applies to my work, it does make, I mean, we're working on some projects internally now, which are going to involve generative AI chatbots connected to web platforms, our websites. It's this process of watching something very quickly come up in the rearview mirror. I have a lot of experience when it comes to the management of data and data privacy as relates to medical information. That's my background, it's in global public health. But I find myself sitting here implementing a chatbot, or about to. I've got a demo about 2 hours after this podcast recording. Not quite understanding what I have to do for my duty of care when it comes to our data and our end users. And that's a journey that all of us are going to have to stay faithful to. I think it's very easy to hit the green button and not have any kind of risk evaluation, risk assessment. So I think that's the part that it sits most, like when it sits on my mind, this is the thing I think about the most. There's lots of companies, organizations who are providing AI technologies which are extremely relevant to the charity sector. My question isn't where can I find AI, it's how can I responsibly use it and implement it as a transformation manager. There's some really interesting thoughts, really useful tips and tricks I picked up. We can get to that later, but those are my immediate thoughts. You know, my question is, it's all split into long-term and short-term, isn't it? We have these long-term questions about unaligned AI, aka AI that is not aligned with humanity and humanity's best interests. We have these really sort of grand conversations about the nature of consciousness, but these short-term risks are what I'm concerned about. Now, we shouldn't take them completely separately. We need to think about both of those pools of risks. One inherently can lead to the other. As with all technology, am more concerned at the moment with the immediate practical implications and the immediate ways that new technology can deepen the fissures that already exist in our societies. Thinking of facial recognition and the inherent discriminatory bias that exists, given that all AI can only feed off what can only generate based on what we feed it. I think that's what comes to mind. I've sort of wandered there away from how it affects my work, but these are the things I think of staring at the ceiling at night right before I go to sleep.
This is why we wanted to do a podcast on it, because it's fascinating. I think it's the first time that I can remember where it feels like the technology has come out around the same time as reporting on the technology has come out. And so like we're all using it and experimenting, and I'm a bit shy about AI, I would say. Shy about AI, that's a new song coming to you soon.
Title of the podcast, I think.
Yeah. I think I'm hesitant because of those reasons, but then I'm seeing people just give their email addresses to ChatGPT and all this stuff. It's very interesting.
One thing you raised there is it's like exactly right about the reporting that immediately happened. When nuclear weapons were invented, which is an analogy which is often applied to AI, the difference there is, there's the same lack of regulation, except that none of us immediately had small nuclear bombs made available to us. In this case, it's a technology that was immediately applicable to work, which is scary and gives us a duty of care and a responsibility that we are not perhaps used to when it comes to new technologies.
Yeah, definitely. What about you, Jonathan? How has it impacted the way you work? Has it impacted it at all?
Very definitely.
Yeah.
So I think one of the interesting things as a CEO is it's probably
the job in which you are required to jump between the greatest number of different subjects and areas within a relatively short space of time. Often that means that you're actually jumping into something that you might not actually know very much about. And this is where the dream of something like ChatGPT is so useful, because instead of going off and Googling a new topic and getting a list of, you know, you get 10 on the first screen with the advertised ones at the top, which are often quite rubbish, actually. Instead of getting all of that back and going, well, which one do I actually look at? I can type a question in to ChatGPT on whatever the subject is and get instantaneously often a reasonably nice explanation back. But if it's rubbish, I can go, can you make that answer a bit more specific? You know, or I can drill into an area. So I'll give you an example. If you wanted to know more about the difference between machine learning and neural networks, you can just type that into ChatGPT and it comes back with a nice little explanation of it. If you then don't understand it, you know, so at one point, I think I tried this as a little test. at one point, it started talking about algorithms. So let's say your knowledge is really more basic and you don't know what an algorithm is. You just then put in a supplementary question, well, what do you mean by an algorithm? And because it's conversationally linked, its response that it gives you isn't some dictionary definition of an algorithm, it's a definition of how an algorithm works in the context of an AI. Mm. So you can kind of have this iterative exploration to get to a point of understanding really quickly, which is good enough for a lot of what you need to do in day-to-day life, day-to-day business, actually, as well. So I found it enormously empowering, and it actually spins out into my wider life in various ways. You know, my kids are at different stages, and one of them's at university, and we're having a conversation about a dissertation, and it's kind of like, oh, I need to know a little bit more about this. So ChatGPT, there's the answer in a few seconds. So in those senses, you know, these are really low risk uses of the technology as well. I'm seeing it as super useful. Yeah. But we'll go on, I think, to some of the other areas as well, which I think are, as we've already started to unpack, interesting, useful chat, but also potentially challenging and ethical issues abound as well.
That takes us so neatly on to the next question. What do we think that the future of AI will be in the charity sector? So we're at this bottom of this very steep upward curve, I would say. So yeah, what do we think? Will it revolutionize charity work in and of itself, do we think?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously it will improve, and ChatGPT is a really interesting example. And I think it is an example that we should use because it's the one everyone's talking about anyway, particularly because I'm a content person. So I feel like I know a lot about it in good ways and bad ways. I think Jonathan's point about it being low risk and the use of it in low risk ways is absolutely kind of the way you should be using it. Use it to inform yourself, to unblock yourself, I think is a really good
thing.
We use it in a sense of like, if I'm trying to get to the crux of an issue when I'm writing, ChatGPT is an aid to that. And I think seeing it as something that abets decent writing or unblocks you when you need it, that's probably the right way. Or stuff like ideation, you know, like you get, give me 10 ideas about this, give me 5 ideas about that, or, you know, like some email headers and all these things. The way we've been using it has been good, and I think that will revolutionize and speed up the way we produce content.
Yeah.
It is also worth mentioning that it's not at the moment high quality, and one of the reasons is because I've learned through studying for, you know, 15 years writing, that a lot of good prose comes down to unpredictability and coming down to the unexpected. So that means, and that applies for poetry, of course, in a more sort of serious sense, but it also applies to every blog you read. If you read someone who's writing well, who wants to capture an audience, they will have unpredictable things and original ideas. And that's what ChatGPT lacks in a lot of ways. I think it could become better. It could even become more unpredictable and unexpected, but we're not there yet. So I think quality, you have to be aware and you have to be mindful when using all AI, but purposeful generative AI, you need to always practice mindfulness. And I think we'll get onto that with the next question, a little bit about regulation and self-regulation, I think is also vital. But I want to talk about content other ways, like imagery, for example, probably more socially dangerous, the imagery I'm seeing already. And
I'm questioning everything now.
Yeah, I mean, the BBC has this thing, is it AI? And it's just images, and you have to pick. It's a really annoying thing, though, because they actually show these real-life images that look really AI-generated. Yeah. So they're just trying to trick you. So I shouldn't condemn the BBC on the podcast. But yeah, AI, DALL-E, Midjourney, Dream Studio, all these AI-generative images are going to take over, and they're going to be important, and they can be used in good ways. And the final thing I want to mention is video, because we've heard a lot about deep fakes and so on and so forth in usually negative connotations, and for good reason. I mean, they've been used in horrific ways. But at the same time, there is this opportunity with deep fakes and generative video where we could actually see massive changes to filmmaking. Animation, I mean, we did an animated video and it was very expensive, very pricey, and very convoluted and complex. Now that's going to change in the near future. And also for charities, it could be quite revolutionary. You think about, say, the Great Ormond Street Hospital used to have I think they still do, they have an augmented reality that they give to children who are going to go to the hospital to give them a sense of home and a sense of place. And that's just a beautiful use of augmented reality. It actually makes them feel safe and comfortable going. And if you thought about how deepfake could be used in that sense to service users, to give them a taste of things and to make them feel settled and comfortable, I think it's got a profoundly positive impact. Is there, and it's applicable. So it could have a net positive impact.
Yeah.
Again, as with everything, and I'm sure we'll talk about this later, it's about maximizing the sort of positives, minimizing the harm, and regulation is the way to do that. But just to say, I do think with stuff like, another example of the way that deepfakes could be worked, if someone with autism experiences the world in quite a different way, and we've never been able to see how that would be experienced, or we struggle to. But augmented reality, as with deepfakes, allow us to get a bit, they allow us to develop empathy for people, and that is how I think the charity sector could use it in a really profound and positive way.
That's really interesting. I'm excited to see that, you know, as someone who's AI shy, it's really great to hear those positive ways that it might impact the charity sector. What about you, like, Jonathan?
Yes.
Are you seeing it's already impacting the charity sector?
So I think this is an interesting one, and I'm always a little bit wary about the word revolutionary. Yeah. You know, I remember AI being talked about 30 years ago and everybody going, it's going to revolutionise our lives, and it didn't at that time.
Yeah.
But I guess the recent emergence of generative AI does feel like a game changer. I guess how much is still a very open question, because if we look back on previous waves of technology, actually the word processor was kind of a game changer. You know, it destroyed typing pools which existed in the 60s and early 70s. Email, you know, there used to be memos being sent around offices and post people delivering them in trolleys not that long ago. So some of these technologies creep in and you think they won't change things much, but then they actually do over the longer term. But that's a really important point. It's always over the longer term, and they make slow, gradual, incremental changes. So coming to what will that mean for charities? Well, the big challenge, obviously, for nearly every charity I know at the moment is demand massively outstrips the capacity to deliver. So any tools that can enable charities, and it's a bit of a hackneyed phrase, but I think it's really true, to do more with less can be hugely useful. And the types of applications we can think of here in charities, if you're a content producing charity, you know, and a lot of charities need to support end users with lots of content and information, you can produce that more cheaply and quickly. If you're running campaigns where you need to quickly generate lots of quite highly customized emails, you can use the technology to generate those for you as well, more quickly as well. So on the generative side, you can start to unpack lots of ideas. And then I'm actually, and this is an area nobody's talking about really quite so much at the moment, but I think is really interesting as well, is actually better targeting help on the people who really need it. A couple of years ago, actually, we did a case study on a charity called the Welcome Centre, and they run a food bank up in Yorkshire, and they were able to use AI to actually identify service users who were coming into the service who needed a deeper intervention. You know, so these were the people who were likely to end up using the food bank for months and months and months. And that's not the intention of a food bank. The intention is to kind of bridge relatively short spaces of time, and the people who need that longer term help, you know, so maybe they weren't getting proper access to the benefits system, and there was an issue there that needed addressing. Maybe there were issues in terms of their mental health that needed addressing in order to help them better manage their lives, get into employment, you know, deeper issues that require more fundamental interventions. So if you can identify those issues earlier and target the right intervention at the right time, you can actually, well, first of all, have a lot more impact. That's better for the beneficiaries, and actually be more cost effective in terms of how you do that as well.
That's really interesting. I've not heard about like that. I think that's fascinating. Kiki, do you think it'll revolutionise charity work? Are you seeing it?
Revolutionise work, maybe more broadly. I think that specifically for the charity sector, we exist in a permanent state of needing to recreate in a single role what in the private sector or public sector is driven by entire departments.
That's so true.
It's just a consistent capacity issue at all levels. You know, the government has the... oh gosh, what is it? It's the CDDO, which is the something digital and data office. that's an entire department that is set up to deliver guidance on how we can ethically, correctly use data. And I think at the time when I was trying to upskill myself on Excel in my previous work, I was entirely dependent on if my friend Eric was in the building. If my friend Eric was not in the building, I was not learning about Excel that day. And so the ability for particularly micro charities to be able to jump in and say, you know, I don't know what this Excel formula does, can you please tell me? Which is Phil Dearson, who ran our AI webinar, and also had a wonderful talk at the Be More Digital conference this year. That was one of the uses that he elaborated on. Also, I need to write a formula for X. How can I do that? He had a few different, you know, sort of expanding on what you're saying there. The ways that he said we can use this right now in a sort of the low level way, which should pose in theory too many risks. Strategy buddy, ideas creation, asset creation. That's exactly what you're diving into there, Johan. Coding, which I'm not a coder, but my friends who are coders, you know, jump up and down in mixed joy and terror. tech support, training, and again, graphics with DALL-E. So being able to depend on something right in front of you, that means that you don't have to scroll through an hour of very uninformed Google searches trying to find that skill that you don't have yet, something which is particularly relevant to the charity sector. So that's what immediately comes to mind. We are also going to, quote unquote, revolutionize, drastically speed up our ability to understand the ethical use of data and data security, data privacy. The example which I've taken from, as actually a recommendation, the Ezra Klein podcast has done a wonderful series on these sort of very big conversations around AI and ethics. He sort of has been, so Ezra Klein has been speaking to the people who are in charge of these companies that are putting forward these new immense AI technologies, as ChatGPT, for example. In the charity sector, imagine a chatbot, generative chatbot, AI chatbot, that has given an end user a piece of information. If you're working in housing, it could be about how they, a particular piece of housing law. If you're working in health, I mean, no AI should be handing out diagnoses or support, but let's say that it does, or gives you bad advice about how to engage with a subject of great importance when it comes to your ability to access housing. These are called AI hallucinations, when AI come up with things that were not fed into them. The people who run these organizations cannot tell you how or why that particular they cannot tell you how or why that particular piece of information was spat out. So if something does impact an end user, how are we, through internal audit, through, I mean, God forbid, an external investigation, if something truly, truly does go wrong, if we were to sort of tell, or if we were to explain, well, how is it that this end user received this bad piece of information, our response would be, we don't know. And that is a very risky place to be in, particularly in the charity sector when we are working in areas where duty of care and safeguarding are such top line issues that we must take into account with all the work that we do. So we are going to have to speed up, because as it stands right now, our governments are not doing that.
Yeah.
It's up to us, which it shouldn't be, but it is.
Mm.
So revolutionize the way we work, it will have to really speed up how we build up these skills internally. Mm.
Yeah, I think that's really, really a great point. I think we've seen a lot in the news recently with the people who have created like ChatGPT. They're all at the hearings about regulation in America, and they're all saying how like it could also be really bad, but obviously they think it's good because there's a lot of good uses for it. But yeah, we're in such a weird time at the moment, I would say. So yeah, I would say overall question to tie it all up today. Do you think that AI is positive or negative for the charity sector?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like, do the positives outweigh the negatives, or will we not know that for a few years to come? Kiki, what do you think?
Oh, right. Sorry.
Yeah, let's go in. Sorry, you've answered. I'm taking it.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a witty answer to say yes to a or question.
Yeah.
But it is correct, I think. Negative or positive for the charity sector, it's like you said, we're at the beginning of this massive exponential curve. The good thing is now that because this is such a top ticket item in the news, in our discourse, that we're finally educating ourselves on the principles of it. People don't know, for example, that after our sort of early AI like Siri, for example, we didn't have that many large data sets for training these AI back, quote unquote, back in the day.
Yeah.
One large
last week.
Back in the day, AI. I mean, how far back is that? The Enron scandal.
Oh yeah,
of course. They released a huge trove of hundreds of thousands of emails, which was used to train early AI such as Siri. So when we think of bias in our AI and bias in the technologies we use, a big chunk of our early AI was trained on the language being used by predominantly white, upper-class oil workers in Texas in the late 90s and early noughties. Sorry, that's just a thing I really wanted to mention while I was on this podcast, and I found a way to do it. So, positive or negative for the charity sector is such a huge question. All I want to focus on is, I guess, what I can do right now to make it a more positive impact.
Mm.
I was very lucky to attend a talk over last weekend with a wonderful, run by a wonderful journalist, Luke Bedema, who works for Tortoise Media, who's covered a lot of this stuff. And I got some time after that talk to ask him, I'm implementing chatbots now, internally, generative AI chatbots right now. What on earth should I do to keep this impact positive? Mm. So he had some really good advice on reading and just some things that we can do right now. So the first thing he said is, if you can involve a data ethicist in your work, that is the kind of resource that will really support you in making sure that you are not putting your staff or your users at risk.
Yeah.
He also recommended a few really good pieces of reading, a couple of these and a few from my own research. The one he definitely recommended is the UK Digital Transformation Roadmap from the CDDO, which is the something, I forgot what the C stood for, Digital and Data Office of the UK government. That was published in 2021. There's also the UK National AI Strategy, published last year, and a couple of pieces from the US, actually. Last year, the US put out a blueprint for an AI Bill of Rights, something that, if implemented, would be radical, in the, a radical shift in how we manage data and manage this AI. The pillars of that blueprint were safe and effective systems, algorithmic discrimination protections, data privacy, notice and explanation that you are even engaging with an AI. Yo, and you listed all those items at the top that I thought, I really should have known that. You should have known that walking into this podcast recording today. And human alternatives, considerations, and fallback. Imagine a world where the only option you have to engage is an AI. We already get frustrated when all we have on the phone speaking to a bank, for example,
yeah, is a robot. It's so true.
That can't understand what you're saying. Anyway, so that's the US, the Bill of Rights. And lastly, there's the US National Institute for something, Standards and Technology. They have an AI risk management framework they put out last year as well. And not only does it go into ways of managing the risk of AIs, it goes into how they work in a more simplified way that's easy to understand. So, you know, positive or negative for the charity sector, apologies if that doesn't really fit the question.
No, no, no.
I'm coming at this as a transformation manager who needs to know right now what is right and wrong, what is acceptable and not acceptable in the implementation of this technology. I think that's what comes to mind.
I love that the first answer was yes, and then the expanded answer was also yes.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I mean, we have to, there's a story which came out a couple of weeks or months ago about a lawyer who in the US who was trying to, I guess, put together a brief for a client, asked ChatGPT to come up with it, and ChatGPT proceeded to invent a bunch of cases that never happened. And he submitted that.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, there's actually a really important point there, actually, which is if you're using any outputs from ChatGPT, which, quote, are purporting to include fact, ask it to quote the sources, which you can do as a supplementary question. Say, give me the sources for this. And then you should go and check those sources. Obviously, that's not the case if you're just using it for your general understanding. But if you're actually going to use that, yeah, that's so important.
Someone was telling me recently that there's people are becoming prompt engineers so they can get around sort of mistakes, so they can get the most out of it.
That's a job and will be a huge growth area, a skill area that you need to develop in the forthcoming workplace. You know, just as being able to operate a PC became a skill, because executives in the 1960s and 70s didn't go anywhere near computers or keyboards, but everybody has to today. So it's the same. Jobs will evolve in that way.
On the on the sources point, so my thing would be there's two types of regulation, self-regulation and external regulation, you know, ultimately government regulation versus personal or institutional organizational regulation. And on the first point, Jonathan mentioned the sources. So the EU recently approved the EU AI Act. So that's like a landmark act. It's a big deal. And one thing's interesting is how quick they got it through compared to, for example, the UK, who has released, as Kiki mentioned, basically a white paper. It's nothing. It doesn't have any laws. Nothing's coming up. It's basically use it mindfully. Be mindful of using it. That's basically what it says, to cut a long story short. Washington is even slower, and largely because of their bipartisan politics. I mean, they have so much animosity between the two central parties that they're not agreeing on, and ideologically they don't agree on what AI should be. But the EU skirts some of that, and, you know, for various reasons, based usually on the sort of procedural nature of their democracy and so on and so forth. But in that, they have said that it would ban systems with inappropriate and unacceptable levels of risk, predictive policing tools and social scoring tools, which have been used in China, are an example of what they would ban. So I thought that was good to actually say that we would have banned this. But also, they want summaries of copyrighted data, and they want generative AI to be labelled. That means that you basically do need to tell people what you're using. I think that's the one gripe that has really stuck with me with ChatGPT, is that they're using my work. I know they are, because if you type in stuff about me, I can see they've used some of my words. And I'm going, they're not referencing me. I want credit. Yeah. You know, anyone else, you substantiate, you know?
There's a really interesting point here as well, actually, because obviously it was trained with a data set up to late 2021. But I think a lot of people aren't aware that when you are putting information into it today to ask a question, its default is it adds that information to its learning set. You can actually go in, though, and change your user setup so that data is not built into the learning set. And I've done that because
I put lots of stuff in there that I want to kind of run through. And if it's confidential information about my organisation, which it could be, I don't want that added to its learning set. So there's some real kind of personal checks that you should actually put in place in terms of how you use this as well.
Yeah, and that's self-regulation as well. I think that leads us nicely onto there. Cherry Digital, for example, we put together a very rudimental one. I don't think it needs to be that excessive. But just, I mean, it was basically three principles, guiding principles when using AI. And that was quality, privacy, and mindfulness. And basically it's saying, Kiki mentioned this, but you need to be responsible when using it. And the one thing that we're making a mistake across the charity sector, far worse in the private sector, is using it with abandon. Essentially just saying everything should go through AI, not thinking of consequences, not thinking of how it's going to impact the world generally, not thinking of the risks we mentioned earlier. So my advice, if I can... sounds presumptuous, but my advice is to just be really mindful of the way you use it and put, I mean, ours is half a A4 piece of paper, it's about a piece of paper saying, here are some general principles that you should abide by when using AI. Just be mindful of the way you use it, I think is the bottom line of self-regulation.
I agree.
Yeah, I think I've got a couple of takeaways really, because I think there's a difference between what we can expect to be regulated and what we should do in terms of ethical actions ourselves. So as charities and as individuals, we should encourage our governments to regulate around the really big issues. But logically, most of that is going to focus, number one, on safety, because you know, life and death safety is the most important thing. Privacy, because there's already strong privacy guidelines in place. But actually, a lot of the other areas, which are very ethical, I just don't think the regulators are going to get anywhere near them, because they're going to be so busy on those first two issues. So it's then down to all of us to try and act in a way that is as ethical as possible. And to me, ethical use of AI focuses on a couple of key principles, and focuses very much on fairness. So when we are training an AI to do certain processes, ensuring that the data we're training it with gives fair outputs and checking those outputs are fair. And I can't remember who it was, but I know that one of the tech companies was at one point using it for recruitment with fairly disastrous results. Transparency is the second thing. So you're actually providing some transparency about how the processes are working, how the decision making is happening, and the third one is actually a more general digital principle that I think is really good, and that's kind of respectfulness as well. You know, any digital system we implement should be respectful of users and stakeholders in different communities. So if we apply those three principles to our use of AI as well, I think that should keep us operating in the areas where we should be.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to end.
Respectfulness.
Respectfulness. I think it's true.
I think easy
to. Fullness.
That's what it means to me. I think that's all we have time for. Thank you so much for a fascinating discussion. I think this is a subject we haven't heard the last of yet. This podcast could have been hours long. It's fascinating. So charities can stay up to date with developments on AI via the Charity Digital website. We're always writing about it. We've got content, newsletters, on-demand webinars, and future webinars all coming up on this subject. So yeah, check that out on the Charity Digital website. We've also got content on lots of non-AI topics. So you can find information on everything from how the cost of living crisis is affecting fundraising to how to combat burnout, which incidentally is the subject of our next podcast, which will come out 2 weeks after this one. So thank you so much for listening. Hope to see you next time. Thank you everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.